in the appropriate location, so you can then just click on the links. Coming back to the procedure or to the various steps in the procedure, there is a rather strict timeline that controls the procedure from the very beginning to the final step. The first step is, as I already said, the nomination phase, the call for candidates. That time frame started in October 24th last year and ended at 31st of December 2014, at the end of the previous year. Right after that, on the 1st of January this year, we moved on to the comment period. So this is actually the period, and this is actually the time frame when the confirmed candidates are known and the community is invited to submit their comments. This phase will go on collecting comments till the end of March. And with the beginning of February this month, we started formally the interview phase. In the selection procedures, there is a provision to have three or potentially three phases of interviews. The first phase is that we reach out to the candidates with a set of questions, and it's the same question, set of questions to all the candidates, and we ask them to respond in writing. And the second round of interviews are going to be conducted on the telephone, and the procedure would also allow for face-to-face interviews, but given the timelines and given the meeting dates and locations this year, between now and the end point, at the moment it seems rather not possible or not appropriate this time to go into face-to-face interview stage. So for this selection procedure, for this event this year, we are going to have the written responses and we are going to have telephone interviews with the candidates. And this is 1-3 of the sections of the 5-step procedure. And right now, during this week, we are in the comment and in the beginning of the interview phase, and we are, we being the interview committee and the address supporting organization at large, we are going to put together within a few days the set of questions to submit to the candidates and ask them to come back with their written answers. The remaining two steps for the selection is actually the real selection process, where the ASO is going to decide on the candidate between the 1st of April and the April 17th, so more or less a two-week period. And by then, the ASO is going to submit the information about the chosen candidate to ICANN, and ICANN then has the time frame between April 18th and the end of May to perform the to perform the due diligence procedure. So the first three steps are under the responsibility of the ASO, and the remaining two steps, the due diligence and the announcement of the selected candidate, is actually the responsibility of ICANN. And after we have been walking through that procedure to be finished not later than June 1st, we will be done, we being the ASO, and the date of, or the statement, we are going to be done no later than the 1st of June, there is also some significance to that date, because at that date, the information will be available to the NOMCOM, which is expected to walk through their procedure by the time of the Buenos Aires meeting later in June, because this is going to provide the NOMCOM a means to look at the geographic distribution of the members of the board and take care of the boundary conditions. So that's all of that from my end. Do you have any questions regarding the board of directors selection? That seems not to be the case. So thank you very much. And back to Alan. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Wilfried. Okay, next I invite Ricardo Patara to speak about the status of the IPv4 address pools in the different regions.
Okay, thank you, Alan. Ricardo Patara, I'm ASOAC for LACNIC region. I don't have slides, I'll just mention briefly the status of IPv4 address space among RIRs. Just a bit of history. IANA had its IPv4 inventory depleted by February 2011. After that, APNIC was the first RIR to deplete its local IPv4 inventory in April 2011. And for the last /8, they had a special policy for distribution in this address pool. According to this policy, any APNIC member can receive up to /2 equivalent or 1,024 IP addresses. But after IANA started to issue more IP addresses, after the global policy for IPv4 post-exhaustion policy was taken in place, APNIC also allows members to receive another /2 equivalent from this other pool. But is that the maximum they can receive? Later in September 2012, RIPE-NCC was the RIR to have its pool depleted also, and they also have a special policy to distribute from the last /8. According to this policy, any member of RIPE-NCC region can receive up to a /22 equivalent also. Then we had LACNIC last June 2014, which also had its IPv4 inventory depleted. And LACNIC also has a special policy. According to the policy, any organization, any member can receive up to a /22 each 6 months, so they can return to request additional address space after the 6 month of last allocation. For this policy, LACNIC set apart equivalent of 2 million IP addresses. Once these 2 million IP addresses are consumed, another phase of this special policy will take place. And according to the next phase, only new members can receive IP address allocation, no additional allocation, just the first allocation, and is limited also to a /22 equivalent. And AFRINIC still has IP addresses in this pool. It's equivalent to 2.8/8s, but they have a special policy to take place when AFRINIC reach a situation where they cannot fulfill new requests for IPv4 allocations. And this special policy is called soft landing. It has two phases. The phase one will limit the allocation to a maximum /13. The second phase will take place when this pool reach the equivalent to a /11. And at this phase, the allocation will be limited to a /22. They also set apart a /12 for any new future or need or usage they foresee in the future. And we have also Erin. Leslie kindly accepted the invitation to talk about Erin, and so I invite Leslie to come here. Thank you, Leslie.
Good afternoon, everyone. I have a very quick update on IPv4 depletion status at Erin. I have no slides, but I have my security blanket. I have my laptop with me, so I don't forget anything. So currently, there are 0.37/8 equivalents remaining in Erin's available inventory. That's listed on an inventory counter on our homepage. It gets updated daily. That 0.37 does not actually include some space that we have reserved per policy. There's a /10 block reserved for IPv6 transition. So far, we've only issued a single /24 from that block, so I assume that will be around for quite some time. We have a /16 reserved for critical infrastructure, internet infrastructure providers. And then we have quarantine space, and we have about 6/16 equivalents. And that space is space that gets returned to Aaron or that gets revoked by Aaron for non-payment of fees. And we hold it for 3 months to clear filters, and then we put it back into the available inventory. So the available inventory fluctuates on a daily basis, depending on what we're issuing, what comes back to us, and also depending on when we get allocations from the IANA. I think that Ricardo mentioned that there's a global policy, and it allows each RIR to get an allocation from IANA twice per year. So far, since the policy was implemented, each of the RIRs has received 2/12s from IANA. So Ricardo also mentioned austerity policies at some of the other RIRs. Aaron has no austerity policy, so we're issuing from our last /8, and we will continue to issue until we hit run out, whenever that may be. So far in the Aaron region, it's kind of interesting. It's been extremely orderly. We haven't seen any rush to get IPv4 address space like you would expect and like what happened in the APNIC region. We hit our last /8 in April of 2014, and we're still working from that last /8. So it's been very slow. In fact, in 2014, we only issued a little bit over a /8 in total to our community. So we don't actually make predictions on when we'll run out. We sort of leave that to the experts like Jeff Houston. But we may see run out, or at least getting down to the last bits of space, maybe as late spring or early summer. There's really no way to tell. It just depends on who's coming in for space, whether the large providers take the large blocks. We'll see. I think that's all I've got. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Ricardo. All right. So we still have lots more time. I'd like to remind everybody that the RIRs and the ASO do not do policy development during these ICANN meetings. The development of RIR policy happens elsewhere in the five regions. And so everybody is welcome to get involved. You can get involved in the policy development process in any region, even if you do not live there or work there or have any involvement there. Okay. So, as you know, there are five RIRs. We've divided the world into five pieces. Aaron for the much of North America, LACNIC for South America and parts of the Caribbean. RIPE NCC for Europe and parts of the Middle East, and APNIC for the Asia Pacific region, and AFRINIC for Africa. So each of those RIRs has a regional policy development forum, and they have mailing lists. They have two public meetings every year. So between the five RIRs, there are 10 public policy meetings per year, where everybody is welcome to get involved in the policy development process. We're also trying to encourage a little bit more cross-community involvement between ICANN stakeholders outside the numbers world. So, for example, we're trying to encourage the ICANN rallos to possibly have meetings at the same time and place as RIR meetings. And some of the RIRs are doing that already. A couple of the RIRs have signed some kind of agreements with the RALOs that they're going to cooperate. So it's great to see that. Okay, so essentially the point I want to make here is that the RIRs do their policy work somewhere else, but you're welcome to get involved. In most cases, there are mailing lists and meetings where you can stand up and speak. All right, any questions? I think that's all we have prepared. So we can go to open question and answers. Otherwise, we can end the session early. All right, I'm not seeing any questions. Oh, yes, Sebastian. Please use the microphone and state your name.
Hello, my name is Sebastian Bachelet. It's not really a question, but just I wanted to acknowledge that you are coming to the ICANN meeting, and that's a good thing. Even if you do policy in your region, the fact that you are here, even if there are so few people, it's very important for the overall community. And I say that on my behalf because I have no any more duty in this organization since a few months now. But thank you very much for being here and be part of the community.
Thank you for that comment. Okay, any other questions, comments? Yes.
Thank you, Arun from the National Law University, Delhi. On the issue of policy development, since the CRISP proposal mentions that, the RIRs are okay with ICANN continuing as the operator. According to the policy development process, the ICANN board effectively has a veto on the proposal that is built up from the community, veto in a loose sense, from the bottom up, which can be rejected twice by the ICANN board. So once this, as this proposal reaches its final stage, how is that policy separation between ICANN continuing as the operator and the ICANN board having this kind of a say in the proposal going to take shape? Thank you.
Right, that's a very good question. We have regional policies and global policies in the numbers community. The regional policies are worked on in their regions. The global policies, and there are very few of them, do have some involvement by the ICANN board. The way global policies work is all five regions have to agree on the same policy. There could be minor differences in the wording and such, but it has to be the same essence. Then if the five RIRs agree on a policy, and if the policy requires some involvement by the IANA, then the ASO ASC will check that all five RIRs followed their documented procedures, and if that test passes, it will be passed on to the ICANN board, where, as you say, it looks as if they have a veto power. They do have the ability to ask questions or raise concerns and refer the policy back to the RIRs. But I think if that happens a second time, so if we go around the loop twice and there's still no resolution, then I don't have the MOU in front of me, but I think it goes to arbitration. I think it's a binding arbitration. But that's never happened. In the past, every global policy has been ratified by the ICANN board quite promptly, and we don't anticipate any problems in the future. The CRISP proposal is not going through this process. The CRISP proposal is not going through the global policy process. It's going to the ICG, so I don't think it's subject to the same concerns. Right? Does that answer? Yeah. Thank you. Okay, any more comments, questions? Ron.
Okay. There you go. Ron DeSilva, also on the ASOAC. I think just clarification. It's not a veto power that the ICANN board has. It is a validation that the process has been followed. So a rejection would indicate that there's concern that we didn't properly follow the process, not that they have any jurisdiction over whether or not the policy makes sense. So it's not a veto. It's a validation that we, in fact, as a community, followed our own bottoms-up process and have ratified it as a global policy. Does that help? Thanks.
Right, thank you. Anything else? No. Okay, thank you everybody for your attention. Thanks for attending this session. And we're going to break early.